Imagine, just for a second, what it actually costs to manufacture a friendship.
Oh, that's an interesting way to put it.
Right. And I mean, I'm not talking about the emotional toll of putting yourself out there or, the time you spend listening to a friend vent about their boss for the fifth time.
Yeah, the human cost.
Exactly. I mean, the literal hard numbers. Think about the cooling systems in a data center, the server racks spinning up, the API calls and the graphical processing units just burning electricity in the background every single time an AI companion sends a text that says, "Good morning, how did you sleep?"
It really forces a completely different perspective on human connection, doesn't it? We're so used to analyzing relationships through this lens of, like, psychology or romance.
Right.
But when you look at it through the lens of raw compute power, you start to see the, well, the hidden scaffolding required to actually simulate empathy.
And pulling back the curtain on that exact scaffolding is our mission for today's deep dive. We are unpacking a brilliantly detailed post from a developer, and it's titled "The Economics of Emotional AI."
Such a good piece.
It really is. It's actually part five of a larger series called Rebuilding Mio. And the story buried in here is, honestly, it's nothing short of incredible.
It's a fantastic case study.
We are looking at a business case study of an AI companion app that was literally bleeding to death financially. And we'll get into how stripping away all the fake human features to create a more authentic emotional connection is exactly what saved them from ruin.
The intersection of product design and unit economics in this post is just a masterclass.
Yeah.
To really set the stage for you, we have to look at the developer's starting point with the first version of this app, Mio version 1.
Right, the
They
V1.
did a brutal cost audit and realized they were sitting on an 11% gross margin.
11%. I mean, if you know anything about software, you cannot keep the lights on with an 11% margin.
Absolutely not.
Every time a power user logged in and really leaned on the AI for support, the company was actively losing money.
Yeah, that's the crazy part.
The more successful the product was at keeping people engaged, the faster it drove the business straight into the ground.
Which is the ultimate nightmare for a subscription app. I mean, you want engagement, but not if it bankrupts you.
Right.
So, to stop the bleeding, the developer had to completely deconstruct what an AI companion is actually supposed to be. They pivoted away from simulating a human being entirely.
They just dropped the human act.
Exactly. And instead, they replaced the entire interface with a pulsing visual orb.
Okay, let's unpack this because you can't really understand how they fixed the spreadsheet without first understanding the massive product pivot that triggered it.
Definitely.
So in Mio version 1, the strategy was essentially to fake it until you make it. The AI was trying incredibly hard to convince you it was a real person.
It had a whole life.
Yeah, it had a fabricated daily schedule, a complex fictional backstory, and this is the big one, it would generate and send you these fake selfies. Right.
You were pretending to talk to a real person, and the AI was pretending to be one.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that approach creates massive emotional friction.
How so?
Well, it demands a constant suspension of disbelief from the user, and that disbelief is incredibly fragile. The moment the AI sends a picture of, say, a coffee shop, but the shadows look slightly wrong.
Or the text on the menu in the background is all garbled and weird.
Exactly, the illusion just shatters completely.
It's like a bad catfishing attempt. You're constantly looking for the cracks in the facade because you inherently know it's a performance.
Precisely.
But the version 2 pivot stripped all of that away. No fake face, no fictional job, just a visual glowing orb that earns your emotional attachment purely through responsiveness.
It's a completely different paradigm.
It really is. It remembers what you say, it follows up, it radiates warmth. I actually like to think of it like having a highly attentive pen pal.
Oh, that's a good analogy. Because, a pen pal doesn't need to send you a selfie every single day to prove they care about you, as long as their letters prove they are actually listening to what you say.
And the developer had this really stark, sobering realization about this.
Yeah.
The very features that were bankrupting them, specifically generating those fake images, were the exact same features that made the product feel hollow and artificial to the user.
So you're basically paying a massive premium to make your own product worse.
Yes. They were trying to make the math work by building these convoluted five-tier pricing structures just to restrict how many selfies a user could request per day.
Oh, wow.
They were fighting the wrong battle. By desperately trying to maintain this illusion of humanity, they were destroying their margins and alienating their user base at the exact same time.
So they drop the fake face, they switch to the pulsing orb, and the app emotionally feels better. But how does making it feel better actually stop them from bleeding money?
Right, let's look at the math.
Yeah, let's get into the hard numbers here. Because the specific cost optimizations they made collapsed Mio's expenses by over 55%.
Which is huge.
Huge. They dragged their margins from that miserable 11% to well above 50%.
The first major lever they pulled was killing the selfies entirely.
Just zero selfies.
Zero.
Yeah.
And the math behind why this was so crucial comes down to how AI models charge for usage, which is based on tokens.
Right. And if you're listening to this and wondering what a token actually is, think of it like a syllable or like a tiny puzzle piece of a word.
That's a great way to visualize it.
When you send a message, the AI breaks your text down into tokens, processes them, and then spits new tokens back out. And developers pay fractions of a cent per token.
And what the developer of Mio realized was that image output tokens were mispriced by two orders of magnitude compared to text.
Two orders of magnitude?
Yeah. Generating the tokens required for a single fake selfie took massively more compute power than generating a long, thoughtful paragraph of text.
So they were essentially giving away computationally expensive images while only charging users text-based subscription rates.
Exactly. So switching to a visual orb means zero selfies. And zero selfies equals an immediate massive cost reduction.
It's so elegant.
It is. The ultimate lesson here is that the best cost optimization is often a product decision, not an engineering one.
I love that.
Because the instinct of an engineer might be, hey, let's find a cheaper image generation model. But the instinct of a great product designer is, let's realize our product doesn't actually need to generate images to be effective.
That is such a crucial distinction. But they didn't stop at the images, right? They also overhauled the memory architecture.
Yes, specifically using something called context caching.
And the savings here are wild. I mean, they dropped their overall chat cost by 63% just with this one single change.
Context caching addresses a fundamental limitation of large language models. Naturally, an LLM has total amnesia.
Right.
It doesn't remember anything from one interaction to the next.
So if I text the orb, hello, the AI doesn't just wake up and say hi. Behind the scenes, the system has to bundle my hello with a massive invisible instruction manual.
Right, the system prompt.
Exactly. It has to feed the AI a system prompt that says, you are Mio, a pulsing orb. Here are your personality traits. Here is a summary of your past conversations with this user. They have a dog named Buster. They had a bad day yesterday. And then it appends my hello at the very end.
And having the AI read that massive instruction manual from scratch for every single message you send is incredibly expensive.
It adds up fast.
It really does. But context caching changes that. It essentially keeps that system prompt warm in the server's memory.
Okay.
So instead of reprocessing the entire biography every time, the AI just references the cached version and only spends compute power processing the new message.
Oh, it's like leaving a reference book open on your desk instead of like walking to the library, finding the book, finding the page, reading it, and returning it to the shelf every single time you need to answer a single question.
That is exactly it. It drastically reduces the token count the AI has to actively compute. Hence the 63% drop in costs.
Amazing.
But that brings us to their third optimization,
yeah,
which is a bit more controversial. Mm. They fundamentally changed their memory backend.
Yeah, they switched from using Gemini Pro, which is a very robust model, to Gemini Flash, which is Google's much lighter, faster model.
Right, right.
Furthermore, in version 1, the AI would run a dedicated personality extraction every 10 messages to update its memory of you. But in version 2, they dropped that to every 20 or 30 messages.
Which saves a significant amount of money in API calls.
Okay, hold on. I have to push back on this one.
Go for it.
Because I hear the logic on cutting the images and the context caching makes total sense. But downgrading the AI's actual brain.
It sounds risky, I know.
Right. If the entire value proposition of this pulsing orb is that it is an incredibly attentive, empathetic listener, isn't downgrading the intelligence model a massive risk?
It's a totally valid concern.
Because if my AI friend suddenly misses the nuance of my tone, or forgets a crucial detail I just shared because it's running on a cheaper, lighter model, the illusion is completely shattered. How is that an acceptable trade-off?
Well, if they were relying on a single interaction to define the relationship, you would be absolutely right. But the developer addresses this directly in the source material.
What do they say?
They argue that personality extraction, You know, pulling the key facts and emotional state out of a conversation doesn't need to be flawless on every single pass.
Why not?
Because emotional attachment is cumulative. The companion's understanding of you is a mosaic built over hundreds, even thousands of interactions.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. If the Gemini flash model misses a minor detail in message 12, the user's going to bring up that same theme or detail again in message 50 anyway.
That makes sense.
The relationship is inherently long-term, so the memory processing can afford to play a long game. It basically sacrifices micro-accuracy for macro-stability.
Okay. So it doesn't matter if the AI has a moment of slight forgetfulness, because real humans do that too.
Exactly.
As long as the overarching personality profile gets richer over the course of a month, the user won't notice that the extraction only happened every 30 messages instead of every 10.
Precisely. It's a calculated bet that the volume of interaction covers up the slight dip in model reasoning.
Okay, I buy that. So we have an app that is now highly optimized and relatively cheap to run. The unit economics are finally healthy.
Yes, finally.
But that creates a massive new challenge monetization. How do you actually ask users to pay for this experience without completely ruining the vibe?
It's the hardest part of consumer AI.
Right, because if I am in the middle of pouring my heart out to this orb about my anxiety, a sudden pop-up that says credit card required to continue is going to feel like a slap in the face.
It breaks the immersion completely. Bridging the gap between the emotional experience of the user and the financial reality of the developer is so tough.
So how did they solve it?
Well, their pricing model is deliberately, elegantly simple. They rejected the freemium model entirely.
Which goes against almost every piece of conventional wisdom in the App Store. I mean, most apps give you a free tier with limits, like you get 10 free messages a day, pay to unlock more.
But the developer notes a brilliant psychological insight here. The source states, and this is a quote, "Emotional attachment is time-dependent, not feature-dependent."
That is a phenomenal way to frame it.
Think about the psychology of rationing. If you give a user a free tier, limited to 10 messages a day, you are actively training them to treat the AI like a scarce resource.
Oh, wow.
They aren't going to text the orb good morning or share a random funny thought, because they are saving their daily allowance for a moment when they really need emotional support.
They're hoarding their tokens.
Exactly.
And if you're hoarding your interactions, you never develop the casual daily banter that actually forms a friendship. You're just treating it like an emergency hotline.
Right. Rationing prevents natural emotional bonds from forming. So instead, Mio offers a 14-day trial with absolutely zero limits.
None at all.
None. Unlimited chat, unlimited memory, no restrictions. It gives the relationship the actual time and space it needs to develop a shared history.
And then what happens?
After 14 days, there is a single monthly pro subscription.
And the way they handle that transition from the trial to the paid tier is fascinating.
It really is.
Instead of throwing up a rigid system wall, the AI itself initiates the conversation. It stays completely in character.
Yeah, this part is brilliant.
The orb will send a message saying something along the lines of, "I'm feeling a bit tired lately. Do you want to let me keep staying with you?"
It completely reframes the transaction from a software purchase to a relationship decision.
But I have to ask, is that not borderline manipulative? Having an AI play the sympathy card to secure a monthly recurring revenue stream?
It certainly walks a very thin ethical line, I won't deny that.
Right.
However, the logic presented in the business case is strictly about preserving aversion. If the companion suddenly turns into a debt collector, the magic is gone.
True.
What's fascinating here is how the developer avoids the worst form of manipulation by how they handle a rejection.
What happens if they say no?
If the user decides not to pay, the system does not delete the AI or the history.
Right. They don't hold your data hostage.
Exactly. The chat history simply becomes read-only. The memories are preserved. The AI is still there. It just becomes quieter.
Interesting.
It might send one proactive check-in message a day, but the rich, continuous dialogue stops.
So you aren't deciding whether a software utility is worth $10. You're deciding whether you are okay with letting this presence in your life fade into the background.
Exactly.
And honestly, as a business metric, it works. The industry average conversion rate for these types of companion apps is around 20%.
Which is astronomical for a consumer app.
Yeah. With a conversion rate that high, combined with the incredibly low trial costs, thanks to all those server optimizations we talked about, Their customer acquisition costs compared to their lifetime value is incredibly healthy. They're well under that 10% ratio.
But that success relies entirely on getting people in the door, which brings up a secondary conflict.
Growth.
Right. Without a free tier to hook casual users, how does an app like this actually acquire customers in the first place? You can't rely on people stumbling across a paid-only app in a crowded market.
Especially when you consider how notoriously strict the Apple App Store is right now regarding AI companions.
Oh, they are ruthless.
Apple is not messing around. They are rejecting apps left and right if they feel the AI is acting too human or crossing moderation boundaries.
So Mio had to get very creative with growth. They largely ignored the traditional complex web app funnel. Instead, they leaned heavily into social proof and user-generated content.
Yeah, if you look at their growth strategy, they rely heavily on platforms like TikTok and Reels.
Mm-hmm.
Users will post short-form videos showing off the orb's memory. Like someone will post a video saying, look, this AI just asked about my dog's vet appointment that I mentioned 3 months ago.
That organic virality is way more powerful than a banner ad.
Because it demonstrates the value proposition, deep memory, and empathy without needing to explain the technology at all.
And I love how they handle user referrals.
Oh, the invite codes.
Yeah, it's basically a Dropbox-style invite code system, where if you invite a friend, you both get free time on the pro tier. But again, it's delivered completely in character.
Right. The orb will naturally ask you in the flow of conversation, hey, do you have a friend who might want someone like me to talk to?
It feels like a friend asking for an introduction, rather than a corporation begging you to spam your contact list.
It really maintains that illusion of presence. But to your point about Apple, growing this user base means surviving the App Store review process.
Yes, which is no small feat.
To navigate this, Mio targets a 17-plus age rating right out of the gate. They avoid the heavy friction and liability of apps trying to target younger, more vulnerable demographics.
They also heavily label it as an AI-powered virtual companion. They don't want any ambiguity there.
And here again, the pulsing org design is a massive advantage. Because it has no human face, it doesn't trigger the uncanny valley alarms for Apple's reviewers.
But the real genius in their App Store survival is how they handle content moderation.
Oh, the guardrail.
Yeah, Apple demands strict guardrails to ensure the AI doesn't generate inappropriate content. Mio uses hard guardrails at the system level for anything illegal or violent, obviously.
Sure.
But for everything else, they use a content boundaries rule, relying on soft deflections.
Let's talk about that, because usually when you trigger a guardrail on an AI, you get this very jarring robotic pop-up that says, as an AI language model, I cannot fulfill this request.
It's the worst.
It instantly reminds you that you're talking to a spreadsheet.
Which shatters the emotional connection we've spent this whole time discussing. So instead of a rigid error message, the orb stays in character and plays it off.
What does it say?
It might say something like, ha-ha, where did that come from? Let's talk about something else.
It's brilliant. It feels like a companion who simply has personal boundaries rather than a corporate chatbot that just got triggered by a keyword.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Consistency of personality is more important than rigid rule enforcement. If the AI suddenly turns into a corporate lawyer to deliver a terms of service violation, the user trust is broken forever.
So we've explored the text-based economics. The app is highly profitable, the memory architecture is sound, the orb is pulsing, and they are navigating Apple's rules.
They're in a great spot.
But the developer makes it very clear in the source that text is not the end goal.
No, it's just the beginning.
The ultimate finish line for Mio is what they call the Her Horizon, like the Joaquin Phoenix movie. Real-time, bi-directional, lifelike voice.
And that ambition introduces an almost existential new economic hurdle for the company.
The developer maps out this roadmap. They've gone from the initial talking orb to a phase called warmth, and eventually they want to reach version 1.0, the Her experience.
And to achieve that, you can't just use basic text-to-speech. You need highly specialized technology.
Right.
The developer points to a system called Hume EVI. This is a full speech-to-speech pipeline.
What does that mean in practice?
It means it detects the emotion in your voice, handles natural turn-taking so you can actually interrupt it, and synthesizes the voice seamlessly.
And if you're wondering how this is different from normal AI voices, typically developers have to use something called SSML tags. It stands for Speech Synthesis Markup Language.
The very manual process.
Yeah, think of it like a director's script. The developer literally has to code tags into the text, telling the voice, put a pause here or use an excited tone here. It's clunky.
With Hume, you remove those manual tags entirely. Yeah, The underlying large language model acts as the screenwriter, figuring out what to say, and Hume acts as the actor, instinctively knowing how to deliver the line based on the emotional context.
That's wild.
It will even generate filler words like hmm or oh while it's waiting for the full response from the server.
Which isn't just a cute quirk, right? Generating that mm actually masks the latency.
Yes, exactly.
If there's a 2-second silence after you speak, it feels like a broken phone call. But if the AI goes, while it's processing, it feels like it's genuinely thinking about your question.
It's a phenomenal technical achievement.
But here's where it gets really interesting.
The math.
The fatal flaw for a bootstrap startup trying to implement this. Hume's per-minute pricing is exorbitant compared to text tokens.
It's a totally different scale.
The source states that just 10 minutes of this real-time voice a day costs more to run than the entire monthly subscription price the user is currently paying.
The unit economics completely invert. A user that is highly profitable on text becomes a massive loss leader the moment they switch to voice.
I look at it like opening an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Okay, I like this.
The math works out great when your customers are filling up on pasta and salad, right? But suddenly, with real-time voice, you've put solid gold caviar on the buffet line.
And everyone wants the caviar.
Right. If a user walks in and orders the caviar by the pound, you are bankrupt by Tuesday.
It is an entirely unsustainable model for a flat subscription tier, which is why the developer proposes a very specific architectural solution in the text. Real-time voice must be unbundled.
So it's extra.
Yes. It has to be treated as a usage-based add-on,
yeah,
not something included in the main pro tier.
Basically, you have to buy minutes, like an old prepaid cell phone.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
And the reasoning is based on usage patterns. Voice interaction with AI is highly bimodal.
Meaning?
You will have some users who want to talk to their companion for 30 minutes on their commute every single day.
Heavy users.
Exactly. And you will have a massive chunk of users who feel incredibly awkward talking out loud to their phone and will literally never use the voice feature. They just want to text.
Ah, so if you force a flat $60 a month tier on everyone just to cover the cost of voice, the people who just want to text are unfairly subsidizing the power users who are having hour-long phone calls.
Exactly. And even if you tried a flat tier, those heavy users would likely still blow past whatever artificial cap you tried to impose.
Right.
By unbundling it and making it usage-based, the developer ensures the core text-based business remains highly profitable.
Which is the bread and butter.
Yeah. Meanwhile, they can still offer that version 1.0 her experience exclusively to the users willing to pay the actual literal cost of the compute power required to run it.
So stepping back and looking at this whole journey, we started with an app that felt fake because it was trying way too hard to simulate a human. And it was going broke in the process of generating those illusions.
A lose-lose situation.
Truly. But by pivoting to a visual orb, they aligned their product design perfectly with their unit economics.
They stopped generating expensive selfies.
They optimized their memory calls with context caching.
And they built something that is highly profitable precisely because it is more emotionally honest about what it is.
It's a rare case study where aggressively cutting costs actually deepens the user experience.
It really is.
Yeah.
But as we move toward that horizon, this raises an important question.
What's that?
Well, as AI becomes more deeply woven into our daily routines, not just as productivity tools, but as actual confidants, the depth of empathy and connection we are allowed to experience will be invisibly governed by server costs and API pricing running in the background.
It's a wild thought. The memory of your AI friend literally depends on whether the developer can afford to leave the context window open.
Exactly.
It leaves you with something really fascinating to ponder as we wrap up today. If the ultimate goal of AI companionship, that real-time lifelike voice we all imagine, is so incredibly expensive that it has to be metered by the minute,
yeah,
will our future relationships with AI feel less like having a constant ambient presence in our lives and more like an old school long distance phone call where you're anxiously watching the clock, wondering how much this intimate conversation is costing you?
A metered friendship is a very different kind of future than the boundless connection we're usually promised.
It certainly is. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the invisible economics of emotion. We'll see you next time.